out of the heart of Ottawa, Canada. Yes, Ottawa, Canada, the Soul Jazz Orchestra with People, People, a Call to Action. It's from their 2008 album, Manifesto. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today we're going to ask a question, see how best we can answer it. Are we ready? Are we ready? That's it. That's the big question. Are we ready? You listen to the news and you see what's going on there in California. More protests, as there ought to be. There ought to be more protests over all kinds of injustices that are now routine. And typically, when these things occur, you expect that people outraged will take to the streets, as they should. But that too has become our pattern. We seem to take the right course, or we seem to find the right response only in the moment that something outrageous happens. And then we get the attention of the authorities, and people swear on everything holy to do something to make things better and to make sure these things don't happen again. And then we say, okay. And we retreat. And then we wait for the next major blow up so that we can repeat the same pattern. But it doesn't sound like we're ready, just the same. It doesn't sound like we're ready. It sounds like we're okay with responding on an as-needed basis, but we really don't have an organized plan. We don't. We talked about the shooting death in San. In California, sorry, that has outraged so many people. This young man killed literally at the doorstep of his grandmother's house in the backyard. And yes, it is absolutely correct that people should be very, very, very upset with that. People should be very concerned about the police still having unilateral and absolute power to inflict fatal consequences in circumstances where they become the judge, the jury, the executioner. And people are left to pick up the pieces, and life goes on. A review is promised, and we know where these things are headed. We don't have to go through with all of that. We know where this is going. But at the same time, we are engaged somewhat, not fully. The whole community is there, but it doesn't have to be. Enough people have to be there to account for a good percentage, let's say, a good representation of the community and its outrage. We know, because I've done programs on this several times, we know the routine. A highly controversial and questionable shooting occurs. The police kill someone in cold blood, and the person is dead. The alarm is sounded throughout the community. The community responds not only to the instant tissue, but they respond to the accumulated anger from previous issues like it, in which there was no resolution, there was no just outcome, and something just boils over, and people want, they want this thing to end. And if their presence in the street lends some kind of support for that effort to communicate to the authorities that people are watching and people are not forgetting, these are good things. We know also that in the immediate aftermath, we have seen familiar faces. The Sharptons, Al Sharpton, Benjamin Crump, the lawyer. And they begin to tackle the issue on a different basis. Very often they're there because the family members or respected members of the community ask for them to be there to come and render some kind of help, a kind of help that they don't feel themselves competent enough to handle by themselves. So they know they have to have some kind of legal representation. And so a high-profile figure is called, that's Sharpton. And Sharpton brings in Benjamin Crump to handle the legal matters. Okay. So why do these things bother me? They bother me. They should bother all of us. Because it is a kind of confirmation that our communities are not together. Our communities still, despite a long list of things like this, we just don't have our act together. We are not feared. Communities like this are not feared at all. There is a formula that goes to work as well on the other side, which is just ride it out. The anger will soon dissipate, but in the immediate situation, you do whatever you have to do to chill people out, and then they'll go away. And we have let this go on and on and on, cycle after cycle, without seeing the need to really get our act together. What does that mean? Our communities are wide open to attack. Because the perception is there is no cohesion there. We could do whatever we wish to do. There are no consequences. And even in the immediate situation, even in the immediate aftermath of something like this, all we have to do is to show up at the meetings and give some kind of lip service to what we know they it inevitably will be demanding, which is an investigation. But it's not, it's beyond investigation now. It's beyond that. So what should these kinds of situations that crop up so often in our communities, what should it compel us to do? I'll give you another example. I read today, you know, it's supposed to be a kind of heartwarming story, except it's not heartwarming to me at all. A man who was wrongfully convicted in a murder and rape of a young woman 20 3 years ago. Finally, is found to be innocent, and the stories are trying to take the angle of the humanity here, not about the things that should make any community very annoyed, very angry. The story is about a groundskeeper who worked for the White Sox. False evidence got him sent away for 23 years. 23 years. At that time, he himself was a man in his 20s, a young father of two children. But the story tells us to be glad, because finally justice has won out. DNA evidence has proven that there was no connection between this man and the victim. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but 23 years in a fairly modern judicial system, and a casual attitude about it. You see, this is where we really ought to get very, very, very involved. Why? I suggest to you that at the very time of his trial, they knew he was not connected. I suggest to you that he was convicted on the basis of police misconduct, people just putting fake evidence together, on the basis of prosecutorial misconduct. The prosecutor had to know how thin it was, the evidence against this man, and didn't care. Because the prosecutor probably just wanted a conviction. He got himself, or she got herself, a prize. And the judge had to have had some inkling, better than an inkling, that something was wrong here with the prosecutor's case. But let it slide anyway. Why? Because this man was dispensable. He was not a real person who deserved real consideration and fairness and justice in a court of law. Everybody can betray that ideal and go home and sleep with no pangs of conscience at all. Because this is something they routinely do. Who cares about the fact that this man, a young father of two, gainfully employed, was snatched away from his family? So he lost that, and they lost that. He lost 23 years of productive life. What is the cost of that? And he lost credibility. He lost the idea that he actually can be believed. When he said he did not commit this crime, he lost that. Faith that the color of his skin, just the switch of the color of his skin, would have given him an entirely different outcome. Routine in the world of criminal justice. But why do we accept it as routine? Why are we okay with that? And we commiserate and we talk about, we'll try our best. And you know, we can't. We don't have anything to fight this system with. When Bill Clinton built the world's largest prison industrial complex, somebody had to go in it. It was a system of extracting from specific communities its men and its youth. However you get them in there, we don't care. Just get them in there. And he is just one example. And we're reading about him today as if miracle of miracles. You know, there is a thing called justice. It took a little while, yes, 23 years. But look, he's back at his old job. They've offered him his old job back. They gave him a cap, a White Sox cap. And he's back on the job. As if there is nothing wrong with his head right now, having been put behind bars for 23 years for something he didn't do, and they knew that he didn't do it. You think that man is in good mental health? You think that man isn't seething with rage at some level? I would have been. But this is where we are. There are so many people in our communities, in one way or the other, who have been forced to accept the brutality of injustice. And yet we are so numbed by it that it takes something particularly heinous and extraordinary to mobilize us into action. The high-profile people show up when somebody's dead and killed in the most egregious way. And immediately, what goes into motion is not about the quest for justice. We're not talking justice here. They're not showing what the true intent ought to be, which is bringing to justice those people who have committed these crimes. Instead, right away, you can see the issue is about the anticipation of a nice fat settlement. There's nothing that foundational that is going to change as a result of their involvement in the so-called advocacy in this case. On the one hand, the job is to chill the people out. You get somebody high profile to chill everyone out. We've got this. And we're talking, that is, I am talking with the authorities. I have been asked here by the family. And I am now undertaking, in behalf of you all, undertaking a kind of, they like the word, dialogue. So we are dialoguing. We want a thorough investigation. And we have some demands. We want the police officers involved to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But we don't want our community going crazy either. want our community to maintain a level head, we've got this. And we're working on it. So you don't need to worry about anything. Don't do anything rash and silly and stupid. Don't cause any additional problems. Just chill out, and this thing will be worked through. On the other hand, the lawyer, being a lawyer, and having nothing to do with the prosecutor's office, they're all talking, you see. So we should all be calm. They're all talking. But make no mistake, from the lawyer's perspective, this is a big fat payout. When all is said and done, and when they're all finished talking. His role probably is to even induce talk of a quick settlement here. Our communities are not prepared the way they ought to be. And it defies logic in my mind that when something this awful happens in your neighborhood, you can't fix it. You're not in a role of fixing anything. You're outside of all opportunities to fix things. The leadership of the town isn't talking to you. The lawyers and the high-profile folks are not talking to you because they would explain that they have been sent for. They have been sent for. And their number one priority isn't you. Their number one priority is the family. But are these people responding appropriately? We will never know. We will never know. I remember when, in the aftermath of the killing by police of Amadou Diallo, at the time I was the editor in chief of a black newspaper that had some degree of recognition. And I was asked by a group of African chiefs. They insisted that I attend as their guest, if you will, this meeting, this high-level meeting that was to occur between Eric Holder, who was then the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, a group of black legislators, and the African chiefs, and the parents of Amadou Diallo. The concern was very clear from the chief's perspective. They demanded to know what the Justice Department was going to do about the fact that these officers, all of them white, all of them in plain clothes, fired 41 bullets at their son, when all he was trying to do was to go home after a long day. He was, in fact, about to put the key in the door. And why was it not seen as an out-and-out murder? What was the Justice Department committed to doing? The first thing that they, I'm talking about the black elected officials and the high profile folks, did not want me in the room at all. The chief said, if she's not here, we're not here. Indicating they had no reason to trust the system. And that I was there to report on what was going on. And I did. Nothing substantive came out of that meeting, except the traditional promise, well, we look into it. What does that mean? It was an interesting dynamic to witness. All black folks in the room. And one group is saying, you, we don't want you in here. And the chiefs said, if she is not here, we're not having this meeting. Intuitively, what they were saying is, you cannot be trusted. And we're not here to play games. If you have nothing to say that cannot be reported back to the people who are asking the same questions that we're asking, then what is the point? What is the point of being here? In the end, nothing was done. So they were absolutely correct. Promises were made. Oh, we're going to look into it. Same thing. We're going to look into Ferguson. Oh, we're going to look into the. It doesn't matter what the situation is. That is the response that you're going to get from an administration. They're not outraged. They're just mildly inconvenienced. It's the same thing here. This man spends 23 years in prison. Somebody continues to draw a paycheck for 23 years. Somebody qualified for a pension in 23 years as a prosecutor or as a judge, as a cop. Somebody who produced false evidence continued to have a job that A, paid quite well to begin with, and B, contributed to a very fat pension while this man is in prison. But that is not part of what the system is designed to do and look into. And we don't have people in our communities who say, wait a minute. This is not about the killing, and this is not about your charge that this man committed murder and rape. It is about the integrity of this process. We heard on the tape, why am I blocking on the name here? I'll get it in a minute. We heard on the tape one of the police officers saying, mute, mute, meaning mute your body camera so that it doesn't pick up what we are to talk about in this moment. We're in a crisis situation. So mute it. It's against the law. It's a conspiracy right there. Who is going after that? Who is thinking, well, everybody needs to know what is happening here. Everybody needs to know who did what. And there's something that starts off with a stench. We don't have to look into it to find the stench. We can smell it right now. But no, it's always we'll have to wait and see. would have to do a thorough investigation, and we will wait and see what the report or reports produce. No. If our communities are together by now, we ought to have some kind of a system. We should. And if one does not exist, each of us ought to take our cues and figure out if we were in this situation, what system do we have? What system can we call on to produce even a small trace of justice? So we're constantly in this push and pull, thinking that the job that we have is to fight in the instant. I would disagree with that, but it's not the only job. At some point, we ought to see the regularity of these things occurring means that somebody's got a system and it's working fine. Because in every single instance, the system worked. Imagine this. Crown Heights is in the middle of a massive upheaval in the aftermath of the killing of a little boy mowed down by a car that was part of a motorcade. And the car kept going, never stopped. The boy was killed, Gavin Cato. His cousin, Angela Cato, was badly wounded. And she too was run down. Okay, you know the story? Crown Heights erupts. No surprise to me. More than 10 years before that, I wrote a series of articles called Crown Heights, A Lull Before the Storm. Anybody paying attention can see where things were headed in Crown Heights. And indeed, this was the situation that caused this eruption in Crown Heights. Do you know that a meeting was called with then Mayor David Dinkins and other people in his administration and members of the community? And of course, I show up. The mayor and his people got so upset. Rather than proceed with a meeting to discuss what is going to happen here, they started making me the issue. You're always causing some kind of trouble. No, I'm reporting. I'm doing my job. Well, we don't want you here. Well, tough. I like it here. I'm staying here. I'm doing my reporting here. End of story. So there was a standoff. They don't scare me. They're not afraid of me. They're afraid of the Hasidic community that is controlling them. I understand that. And what they were in the room doing was trying to figure out what would be a reasonable outcome so as to make the blacks feel that they were doing something, but also not wanting to make the Hasidic community feel that they were being held accountable for the fact that they came barreling down the street under police escort. They knew children were playing in the street because that's what those stop signs and signs all along the way say, watch out for children. Even after you run over these children, you do not render any kind of aid. You make no attempt to find out how they're doing. You make no attempt to get an ambulance, even though there was an ambulance as part of the entourage, should the Grand Rebbe get sick. And before the day ended, the driver of the car was spirited not only out of the community, but out of the country, where the so-called long arm of the law could not find him, although there is a homicide involved. See? We have no system. We got to find a way to have a system. I'm not trying to beat anybody up, because we can't know what we do. You know, we don't know what we don't know. All I'm saying is we ought to get more and more conversant with the idea that we make ourselves unprotected. We make ourselves unprotected when in any critical situation we cannot respond except in the traditional way. Call in Sharpton, call in the lawyer, and let's get this thing moving. And suddenly, the fight for justice, this is which entails a very, very strong legal battle, that is not the number one priority. It's not the number one priority. So we have to find a way to put on paper somewhere, or to put a kind of discipline in our community as to how we should begin to think about putting a system of response together. We've got to do that. I'll take a little break here and come back to your thoughts and questions right after this at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the lines are open at 888-874-4888. And we try to figure out, how do we get this started? How do we get the community out of this bad habit of looking for others to come in a situation of distress? They may or may not have the same ideas as you, but it seems that we've allowed this to go on for quite a long time now. And especially when there are questionable actions by police that involve killing of civilians, and we don't seem to have an idea of what we should do. What should be done? What are the things that we should look to get done in the immediate situation and afterwards? I'm not suggesting I would, and I don't want it to be interpreted that I think Al Sharpton is no good. Look, we should be happy that there's somebody that could be called on, or the family feels comfortable calling on, to begin the process of interfacing with systems that are not inclined to have any accountability to a community. So I understand that. But I'm saying also, I'm well aware of how many of these cases have gone once these intermediaries get involved. Jeff from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Latrice, how are you?
Okay.
All right. Now, I believe that we should start with the youth. And by that, I mean there should be a junior officers program that we can both train them in their civil responsibilities, but also train them in the community and their constitutional responsibilities. And as they become older, they can go into the police program with a different mindset than a lot of these guys that go in. And that would actually be the we could plant a seed that way. The first thing we can do is to go into our NAACP offices or create another legal outfit that like ACLU, et cetera, that will in every county or every state that will take on these issues so that there is a protocol. Okay, there's a police shooting. They have their investigators. They come with the investigators. They can put the pressure on at a high level. The
But
community at
it's an interesting idea until you consider something. We do not have a habit of supporting those things that you just talked about. We do not have a habit of financially supporting those systems, those things that would be vital to us in communal defense. We just don't. We do not
Well,
support the NAACP. We do not support the ACLU. We just think that whenever things happen, people will just show up and they will solve the problems. Secondly, do we have the time to implement something that you are suggesting now?
We probably would have the time to do something in the legal defense. And if you went to maybe the association in each state, there's probably an association of black lawyers. Or community of Hispanic lawyers, those that will work in the community that will do the type of work, then perhaps put them under an umbrella organization. One of the things with the NAACP and the other ACLU is that they don't have a vested interest in the community.
Well,
Right
I
now, the
disagree with that.
NAACP,
I think they
well,
do.
I would say with the
Listening.
NAACP that, there's been such controversy that people have kind of shied away from the organization. There were a couple of different things, I guess, in the last 10 years or 20 years, or whatever it was. But I think
Okay,
if that's
my issue is this. You have, would you agree with me that this is a crisis?
Yes.
Okay. In crisis, we can't wait for everything to be perfect. You gotta move. Move
Yes.
on something. What is that something?
Now, the alternative is the alternative would be something like the Black Panthers and go for an eye for an eye. If you're, that would be an immediate, immediate solution. Probably not the best, but it would be an
You know
immediate
it's
solution.
not the
But then it would
best.
also
It's
show
not
that,
the best solution. Because now you're asking people to become so militarized that that will be the solution. I think we ought to find a solution. I don't think that that is, you will get more death. Do you think any black community in the United States has enough guns to outgun the system? You really
Oh
think
yeah.
that?
Yes, well, and this, you remember when the Bloods and the Crips signed their agreement that they would not war anymore. The problem is that once they decided not war anymore, they outgunned the police. So when the two organizations were together, they actually outgunned the police. And what the police did in L.A. was to dress in blue and go shoot someone in red, or dress in red and go shoot someone in blue and start the war all over again. It's the whole divide and conquer thing. So there are enough shootings, and there's enough guns in the black community, or they can be got. I'm not saying advocating that as really a solution, but if it was something that was immediate that had to be done, that would be an answer. It actually would be a deterrent to officers, I believe, that would willingly do things like they did down in New Orleans and sit on top of the man and shoot him in the chest. If you don't respond, and this is a macho thing, but if you don't respond with a strike, just like hitting a bully, you know, you stop that bully by punching him square in the face. And he may beat you, but he won't bully you anymore because he knows there's a price
good,
to pay for it.
Except the practical application is far more terrifying than you think.
Yeah.
Because, you're talking about a community that is unorganized. We're unorganized. And, you know, the scariest thing is to give a soldier a gun and he doesn't know where the enemy is. you can't do that. Our community has to go through some kind of a process in which we at least have something that we can consider as a defense against being eternally on the wrong side of justice every single time. But you got us started today, Jeff. Thank you so much for calling. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Are you Chief?
Yes,
hello?
Willie.
Yes. Good afternoon, my sister. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you, Willie.
It's just a beautiful program. First of all, let me say this. The NAACP, it's not a black organization. It wasn't even started by us. The board of directors.
We're not talking about the NAACP. We're talking about in the situation that we're in.
No. I just rather
our about own self-defense. What are we putting together? What do we have together as some kind of checks and balances against what we routinely experience?
Well, I've always suggested this. Even though I'm not a registered member of the Nation of Islam, you don't find these things happening within the Nation of Islam. Join the Nation of Islam. Because first of all, you're taught how to think and how to behave. That's number one. Whether or not you are Muslim or not, join it and begin to learn. You see what I'm saying? Because if you notice, they do not deal with members within the nation that way. And if we had that number, we could go to United Nations, because you're not going to get any justice within this system. Malcolm X was talking about that. You see what I'm saying? Hello?
Well, that's an idea. I mean, it's an idea. But again,
what you are suggesting
is another layer of intervention. I mean, I recognize that the Nation of Islam is a very disciplined organization and so forth. But you can't deny it comes with some other obligations that people may not want to deal with. So,
if it
could serve as you suggest, and I think it's not a bad suggestion, if it could serve as a way of engaging a community in this kind of conversation, that would be a great place to start. Thank you for your call. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice.
Hello.
Good afternoon. I think it's important to get to the point And number one point that I'm thinking about after listening to all this is that everyone needs to understand that it is essentially open season on any black person or African American in this country when it comes to law enforcement officers or certain civilians. So, you know, you got to get that through your mind. Now we're talking about the possible solutions or tactics to deal with this type of thing. The first thing that I can think of is to recognize that these political parties, and for those people who are inclined to gyrate towards the Democrats or Republicans or what, those are only two choices you have of this unit party, to immediately withdraw. I see these little politicians are going around to black churches and whatnot, and we need to just lean on these people and get out of these things and don't vote for them. The point is, you know, people like Cuomo, Democrat, just let's forget about him. Let's lean on him and get him to do the things that he needs to be doing, like get some element of justice in this society to restore automatics to the position as being a regular lawyer in the courts. That's one thing. That's another thing is that people have to recognize that many of these black organizations have been co-opted. And they're just only going to do so much. And the third thing, and I think the most important thing to those who will hear, is to start into targeted boycotts of businesses to put the pressure on them because they are only interested and profit. So we have to learn how to boycott, to lean on businesses, and to get some results. So just marching and letting someone cool us out for a while has worked for the ruling class. But if we lean on these people in the pocketbook, that will perhaps get more response in terms of dealing with this issue. So, you know, I have been on a number of marches with Sharpton and whatnot, and I remember being on those marches, and I didn't see any of these little jive, jackleg preachers and politicians in any of those marches I was on. So even though Sharpton has his faults, he was at least out there saying something when the rest of them were doing absolutely nothing. So I think we could start with that. But we got to break loose of this totally, corrupt political system and letting these people manipulate us with the Democrats and Republicans.
Well, thank you. And that brings us to the end of the program. We have to continue this discussion because I think it is inevitable that we have to have a kind of community brigade. We have to have some kind of system that sends out the alarm that something is wrong, and then what to do. We can't continue simply to be victims all the time. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Global Alert News, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. Get it together.